And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Welcome along to a little piece of GAA history. The first time an Ulster man is ever presenting a hurling show. Now, I don't know the exact stats on that, but I assume it's something like that. And Conan Doherty filling in for Willie here. I've got Cheddar Plunkett alongside me. Cheddar, there's going to be a lot of talking for you here today to hold this party together.
I know, I might leave most of that to Lee there. Lee, I'll need you to help out here now. Folks are talking about hurling here.
Cheddar, how's it going? We get something over it anyway.
And that's the voice of Lee Chin on the line. I must say, lads, I was a little bit nervous when this landed on my lap. I thought, what pedigree do I have to front a hurling show? Then Willie was sort of trying to make me feel a bit better. He said, listen, if Michael Lester can do it, you can do it. Typical good Willie advice. And I thought about it, you know, during the week. And then I thought to myself, hang on, Jesus, if Colin Parkinson can do it, I can do it. Anybody can do this nonsense. How's the body after Sunday, Lee?
Yeah, the body's fine, I suppose. It's the head that I was worried about. But, you know, it was a tough game. You know, you always know you're going to play against like Kilkenny, that it's going to be a massive physical game. And, you know, I suppose when you lose as well, you know, the body feels a little bit worse. But look, it's I'm getting over it now at this stage, a couple of days on, so we'll move on.
Yeah, so we'll not drag you back through your defeat too much. We're going to look ahead to Kilkenny v Tipperary at Nolan Park, 3:30 p.m. But lads, I want to start off with talking about the weights of Slitter. So actually in that game, Lee, you were playing yourself, you might have noticed Owen Murphy scored a pretty decent free from about 110 metres out. Like, it was at the edge of the D, struck it straight over. But as we do in Ireland, we don't really sort of celebrate these things. We think about the negative of it, and it's led to a lot of calls of people saying that the ball needs to be heavier because there's so many scores coming from so far out now. I suppose, what do you think of it yourself, Lee, firstly?
No, I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. I don't think it's anything to do with the Slitter. You know, I've been more looking at the venue, I suppose, Wexford Park, and it's notoriously known for its drastic winds at times. You know, there was a big wind in Wexford Park again at the weekend, and I'd imagine that was probably the reason why Owen Murphy was able to strike the ball so far. And as well as that, Owen Murphy has a serious book of a Slitter. So, you know, if you can anticipate the wind fairly right in Wexford Park, you know, you can more often than not get those ones right from distance, you know.
Yeah, Cheddar, you're nodding along. You agree there, do you?
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I think a lot of strikers, particularly free takers and goalkeepers, are, you know, they're practicing an awful lot on their technique. It's nothing to do with strength, actually. It's to do with real good technique. And you know, I think a lot of players are looking at that. You know, I know some players that would be looking at the golf coaches, looking at their movement and all of that. So I think it's more to do with that. And I agree with Lee. I mean, there was a strong breeze blowing directly down the field, so it's going to bring the ball a little bit further. I think we had this discussion maybe last week or the week before. Anyway, you know, there's been some work done with consistency in slitters and all of that, and you know, I think all of that's sort of sorted out now at this stage. It's unusual that a goalkeeper can come along, for example, and introduce his own slitter into a game now. The, you know, all of that sort of silly stuff is sort of gone. So I think I'd agree with Lee. You know, Wexford Park is noted for that. If there's a breeze behind you, it will carry the ball, and I think it's more down to do with good technique with strikers than, you know, whether the ball is light or whether it's heavy. I think the other side of that is if the ball was very, very light, well, then the puck out from the other side should be equally very, very short, and we're not seeing that.
Yeah, and there are a lot of stats that's going alongside it. I saw Philip Lanigan writing a piece in the Irish Daily Mail. He's basically saying that points are now more sought after than goals in the game. He's saying it's the first year Kilkenny have broken the 100-point mark in the league since the new 16 format was introduced in 2012. He's saying the fundamentals of the game are changing, and one of the reasons for that is the Slitter itself, and there are a lot more points being drummed up. You see some of the tallies that's going on throughout the league. Peter Duggan hit not 19 at one stage. TJ Reid on Sunday there scored not 15. Like, Is that becoming a focus, like, for players to go for points more?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if you look at those stats, I mean, you know, stats will tell you anything, really. You know, you got to look at, you know, what's in behind them. I think TJ scored 12 points from frees. He'd normally score 3 points from play in most matches he would play in anyway. And the same with Peter Duggan. I mean, a lot of those are free takers. So, you know, it's not realistic just to look at a single set of stats like that and to draw some conclusions from it. I think it's more to do with, you know, better use of the ball. I think this has been discussed earlier on in the week already about Kilkenny, that they're using the ball, you know, much better now than they had to do for the last number of years. And in protecting the ball, you're going to move the ball closer to the scoring area, and if you do, you're just going to get more scores. That's the whole principle about how you're trying to play. So I think it's more to do with that. And there may very well be, at the minute, more quality long range shooters playing the game than there has been for a long number of years. I happen to think that there are, and you know, Lee is one of those. So you know, if you have a number of conditions like that, you're going to have a change in trends in stats, and you really need to dig under the skin of those type of trends rather than just taking something straight off the top and drawing a conclusion on it.
Yeah, what do you think of that, Lee?
Yeah, no, of course. I think Cheddar hit the nail on the head there. I think, you know, I would agree. It's about the way teams are set up these days, and it's their tactic to use the ball and hold on to possession, and it's about getting the ball to the right man. It's, you know, you would see it often enough, but it's not a very common thing in games now when people are just shooting from all angles anymore. Like, you do still see it, and it's great when it happens, but more often than not, you'll see the handy score being thrown out to a guy in a better position. And I think that's the reason of that stat, I suppose. It's just about lads holding possession and getting the ball to the right man. And given that as well, you really do look around the country at the moment and you see teams of players that they can just shoot from any position on the field that they're in, long range, you know, out on the wings. You know, they can shoot off left side, right side, and I know that's the modern day county player, but you just have so many sharpshooters in the game these days now that, you know, you give them half a chance and it's over the bar. But the big one is just the way teams are set up these days, to hold on to possession, because it's so vital. No one wants to give the ball away cheaply anymore. And you know, you just, like I said, you get the ball to the man in the right position after that, and if he gets half a look at the goal at all, it's going to be in the post.
Well, there we go. One topic I've put forward, shot down immediately by two hurling experts here. I'll try the next one. What about this, lads? So you would have seen during the week that on the topic of GAA players getting paid, so there's a committee set up by the outgoing Uachtaráin Egan O'Farrell. Farkel, do you want to correct me there, Cheddar? Better Irish than me.
No, I won't say anything like that. I think he got it right first time there, so did Bannon.
So he wanted to envisage what the GAA would look like in 2034. So basically, that would be 150 years after the GAA set up. So this committee was put forward, and they're working on a report, and it says in it, by 2034, this was seen by the Irish Times, the GAA will have developed a model to recognise the time and effort contributed by senior inter-county players and their respective managers. This will facilitate effective budgeting, where senior inter-county players and managers will retain their existing amateur status, but have their value to the association and their enormous commitment to their sport recognised by a defined and agreed allowance. Now, I know Willie's come out in the past and he's very for players getting paid something, especially with the amount of money that they bring in for the GAA. Lee, I know yourself, you said you're trying to become or live as much of a professional lifestyle as you can to be a better hurler. I mean, what would you think of this sort of in 2034? Do you think it's a goer?
I suppose the big one there was, you know, obviously mentioning that the game will still remain and the amateur status will still remain, and you know, we all know that's so important to the GAA, and that's why we all love playing the game, I suppose. Look, as a player, as a current inter-county player, you always have the people around that would often say, you know, players should be paid, and then you have the odd player that, you know, they have problems financially and have problems at work and the commitment level that they give to their inter-county setups, and it is very tough, like, and it's tough in regards to the commitment levels that are required these days, and you sometimes do feel maybe you'd like to be compensated more in regards for your efforts. But you know, like, I've even had experiences at times when I was younger, and I mightn't have been out there as much, and I mightn't have been as recognisable, but there's times you walk into your home ground in Wexford Park, and you're almost being charged to win to watch a club game, and you know you're only there the week before representing your county with a couple of hundred or thousands in the stand watching you play. And I just think things like that could definitely be facilitated, you know, that every inter-county player is given more of I suppose, a recognition for themselves or for their family for when they're going, you know. I do get a little bit down at times when I go off to play at my club, and I know it's a different setup at your club and your county, but you're going off to play with your club and you've been representing your county all year, and your family members, your mother, father, your grandparents have to pay to get in to watch games. It kind of puts a sour taste in my mouth at times, you know, but they're the kind of things that I look at that I'd say the GAA could be a bit better on in regards to that, maybe facilitating stuff like that. But I do look, in a couple of years' time, I can see it being a case where players do get paid and compensated for their efforts.
Cheddar?
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting discussion, and I think it should be separated into a different area. I think Lee is right. There's very, very few players playing currently or former players that would want pay for play or would want professionalism, because that brings a huge amount of other pressures and all of that as well. You know, they certainly need to be looked at seriously. But I suppose, first of all, I've got to say that it's difficult to comment on because I didn't see the report. But I'm amazed that we're talking about professionalism in the GAA when we don't have actually amateurism across the GAA, you know, properly set up at the minute. And I would have thought that a report like that, looking forward, and I do fully agree it's strategically looking forward and that, and I think that's the right time span to be looking. I would have thought that it would have been much more important to look at how can we grow the amateur game by 2034 so that there's an increased number of teams, for example, playing hurling at the top level or football or whatever. And I would have been much more interested to see a report or a discussion around that, even if it's just the fundamentals of it, about how we're actually going to do it. I do think that players are looked after a lot better than certainly than they were in my day, and a lot of the things that they would be looked after you wouldn't actually hear about. But I do agree with Lee as well. There's other areas that could be looked at that, you know, I think would mean a lot to players. And it's not necessarily money. I think it's just recognition, I think, is what Lee is saying here, that when he goes into Wexford Park or goes into a club game in New Ross or wherever, you know, he doesn't want it to be up in lights rank like that he's getting into the game. But I think it's just recognition that, you know, look, he's given 7 days of the week to this game for his county, and just as a return on that, either himself or his family gets into club games or whatever, I think certainly that could be looked at. I think it would be very interesting, though, just to have a separate discussion on hurling in particular going professional, because I think it's actually more suited to hurling, considering the geographic base of hurling in Ireland, than it actually would be for football. And I think that discussion would need to be just completely separate to, you know, hurling as we know it and that. And, you know, there need to be certain parameters put around that and that. For example, how are you going to get, if you have a panel of 25 or 30 players, so how are you going to attract in players into that? Can it only be within your own county, or is it something like the NFL in America where they have a draft, or the basketball has a draft or something like that? I think there's great room for it. I think it actually would be successful, and I think it would work. And I think it would be very, it would put probably the GAA under a lot of pressure themselves to up their game on the amateur side, because obviously the GAA wouldn't run that professional organisation. It would be, it would be a media tycoon, something like that, Kerry Packer or some of those that would come in that would actually set that up. And obviously there's a whole degree of commercialism about that. These people don't come in, spend absolute fortunes to lose money or anything like that. They come in to actually make money. But I do think, just back to the point, I think for professionalism in hurling in particular, I think it would really work. Just think about it for a minute, even just the counties in the top flight at the minute. You have the Waterfords, Kilkennys, Tipperarys, Corks, Limericks. They're all beside one another, you know, even on a home away basis. That's, you know, maybe 14 or 15 games, if you were looking at a professional league or something like that, to run right throughout the summer. I think there's a support base there for that, particularly if you had really top class players playing it. It would be a very interesting discussion, but not under the auspices of GA. I think I do agree with Lee. I think it should be amateur, and I do agree with Ozzie Gleeson. It really is our hobby, even though we're all savagely serious about it and it's hugely time consuming and all of that, but at the end of the day it is our hobby, and a player can walk away if he wants to. You start contracting players to teams and all of that, and that all goes out of it. It's now your job, and there's very different, you know, commitments and all of that involved at that stage. But just to finish off, I suppose, my comment on it, I think it would be a very interesting discussion about how a professional hurling championship and teams and all of those things, and how do we get paid, and you know what the degree of payment would be, and the whole commercialism of that, and how it would be PR'd and all of that. It would be very interesting to have that discussion as on a separate basis.
So you think that could run alongside an amateur organisation, almost like boxing, where you have professional boxing and amateur boxing, and it's just if you play amateur GA, you can't play professional GA?
I think it would have to be like that. You know, you just couldn't have the two of them competing you know, at the one level. I mean, at the end of the day, one is going to be a professional sportsman, the other isn't. But I think there's been precedents, you know, around the world and even in our own country here to do with rugby. And it's a very, obviously, very, very risky business to be getting into, particularly where there's low population bases and that. It's very easy to do that in the UK, where you have a number of big cities. You know that you know you have a you know ready-made audience almost, but I actually do think that you know, if you obviously would need an awful lot of analysis in that, I actually do think there's a possibility that it would work in Ireland, and more so probably for hurling than it would be for football.
Lee, could you play for a different county if it was professional?
You know, of course, for myself as a player, a current player at the moment, it's not something that I would have grown up in the GAA considering. You know, you look up to your heroes when you're young and you're a kid, and you look at your own heroes from your own county, and no, it's not something that you could imagine. You know, as a kid, you grow up admiring other players from other counties, but at the same time, you want to see them beaten every day. Your own county's out against them. So, no, for that question, no, I couldn't imagine myself playing for another county and playing against Wexford someday. But you know, if it was ever to, I suppose the subject of professionalism is an exciting subject, because it's, you know, everybody at some stage of their life would imagine what it's like to be a professional sports man or a sports player, and you know, you imagine the lifestyle that it might provide, and you imagine financially how well you could set yourself up. But you know, I suppose it's young people these days that, if it ever did turn professional at some day, it's the young people at the time that will grow up within that system that would I suppose be used to it, and they'd understand it, and they'd grow up in that culture of being a professional sport. But just for the modern day players, no, of course we wouldn't like that, because it does involve contracts and moving on to different counties to play against your own county possibly someday, and it's not something that we would have ever have grown up I suppose considering. So look, if the game was to turn professional tomorrow, you could imagine in 20 years' time, the mindset, I suppose, of the younger players that are only toddlers at the moment, when they grow up to when they're in their 20s, of what way, I suppose, they would be as athletes. And you know, they'd look back almost on the day, and they'd nearly imagine, they'd say to their friends, remember the day this game used to be amateur, Jesus, how did the players ever do it? That's the kind of stuff that you know, you talk about, they'd talk about in their time. But at the moment, no, of course not. I couldn't imagine myself playing for anyone else.
Yeah, and lads, what about Dermot Connolly? Like, God knows I bang on about him too much in the football show, but I suppose it's a bit of a crossover now into the hurling, where there's a report in the Times from Damien Lawler suggesting that he could be in line to link up with Pat Gilroy and the Dublin Hurlers. Now, I know that was sort of touted at the start of the year now as well, but now a report from Christy O'Connor says he's not with the Dublin panel, he's not with St Vincent's at the minute either, playing football or training. Like, obviously this is all reports, but it's coming back to the Dublin Hurlers again. And if he's 30, if he's not making the Dublin team, maybe he will decide to switch codes for inter-county status. But would he even make that much of a difference? Like, is he this good a player, or is it just a profile that we're all getting caught up on?
I might come in there. I suppose, well, first of all, Damien and Christy are very responsible journalists, and you know, I need to say that at the start. But I think, you know, is this just conjecture, or you know, is there some basis on this? I suppose, just for myself, you know, you can never really say who is your best hurler, your best Gaelic footballer, but because you have a whole lot of different things coming into different positions, different teams are playing with, different times and so on. But during my time watching Gaelic football, I think Dermot has been probably one of the best footballers I've ever seen. But I think I don't think we should really comment on it, Conan, to be honest with you, because you know, these are things personal to players themselves, and we don't really know the issues as such. The only comment I would make is it would be a massive statement to Dublin Hurling if he was to go there, and you know, I'd actually love to see it. But other than that, I think we should just give Dermot the space to do, you know, what he wants to do, and you know, I think playing with Dublin is, you know, it's a very, very high profile, obviously a great honour and a great pleasure, but it brings its own pressures in that as well. And, you know, I don't think we should be adding any more to players. You know, if he chooses to go where he wants to go, it'd be great if he was hurling, but wherever he goes, I think we should just wish him the best for whatever he wants to do.
Oh, absolutely. And I suppose my question is just, I suppose, to you as well, Lee. Like, you know, I've seen him play a bit with St Vincent hurlers. Like, is he at that level that he could make an impact at intercounty level with a hurl in his hand?
Look, I suppose with the current situation with McConnelly, to be honest, I haven't read too much into the whole dilemma that's going on at the moment. I've just briefly known, obviously he's not part of the setup with Dublin Footballers anymore, but I have obviously, the moment I heard it, I automatically just thought I wonder if Pat Gilroy would have his stake in there now at the moment with trying to get him in, get him involved. And you can imagine he probably would. I imagine he has a good relationship with the likes of Pat Gilroy, been under him with football before. But look, I don't know. I've obviously heard of Dermot Connolly and his hurling ability and what kind of hurling background he has with Vincent, but I haven't actually seen actually many games of him playing. I couldn't actually comment on what kind of an impact he would have in the Dublin hurling setup. But I definitely would imagine he'd bring a different view to it in terms of the players. He has, you know, he's a lot of medals in his back pocket at the moment of going out to win, and he could bring a different mentality to the Dublin hurlers. He could bring it to a different level in terms of preparation. We don't know, but in terms of hurling and how much he would be able to contribute, I'm not 100% sure, but he definitely would bring something to it in regards to just experience and, you know, on the bigger days, I suppose.
I tell you, if he's even one-tenth a hurler as he is a footballer, he'd be some hurler for Dublin. Anyway, next up we'll have a look at Kilkenny v Tipperary.
After the match with Marty Morrissey and the Marty squad, and you know, the big thing for me yesterday with Clare versus Galway was,
hang on, did you ask permission to do the Marty squad there?
Well, I didn't, but I was only a special guest. Last Thursday you asked me the same question when I started Bubbles, and I said yesterday on the Marty squad, because yes, I would have started Bubbles for that game yesterday. That was the first I heard of Johnny King coming back with the Galway squad. You know, I was asked just in the Marty squad.
Here, Damien, are you getting paid for Marty squad plugs on our show here?
That's three.
Wait, no, I do that completely voluntarily.
He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses! What a match!
Move away from the messing there, lads. Right, we have a serious show to do here. Right?
All right, lads, the game is at Nolan Park. It seems to be whenever Kilkenny and Tipperary are in the league final, they seem to rotate it between Semple Stadium and Nolan Park. I mean, how much of an advantage is that going to have for Kilkenny going into this game?
I think it is an agreement, I think, to have among themselves that if they somehow come across each other within competitions, that the agreement of home and away. And I think the last league final they played in, which was the last league final, I think Kilkenny were in, was in Turris Semple Stadium.
Yeah.
I think Kilkenny won that game, and you know, to be honest, it is a huge advantage. You know, no one wants to go to Nolan Park and play against Kilkenny, and nobody wants to go to Semple Stadium and play against Tip. You know, just as a player myself, we know that being in Wexford Park for us is massive. We love it. We love being in front of our home fans. We know we're going to get the majority of fans in. You know, you're so used to the ground, and particularly like in Wexford Park, we know that we kind of, I suppose, our team that played there so much, we understand there's going to be a big wind, and sometimes we know how to manage it, and other days it might go against us. But you know, in Kilkenny and Tipperary, they'll have their own little bits about their own stadiums and their own grounds as well, that they'll know the ins and outs of it. They'll almost know what way the ball is going to fly through the air in it, but they know exactly where the posts are going to be. It's just a thing about players that they're playing inside their own stadium so much that they're so used to it. And it is, I think it is an advantage, and psychologically as well, it's an advantage. But it's in Kilkenny's favour this weekend.
Yeah, so in 2009 it was in Thurles, Kilkenny won. 2013 it was in Nolan Park, Kilkenny won. 2014 it was in Thurles, Kilkenny won. So now on Sunday, mm-hmm. it's going to be in Kilkenny again. Cheddar, like, you know, obviously that is a huge advantage.
I think sometimes it can, but you know, even from from my own perspective, you know, when you look at it, at the end of the day, it's you know, it's a pitch the very same as Thurles or any of the others, the same goals and all of that. I do take Lee's point that you do train in the pitches, and you know, particularly if you're a forward, you just know automatically where the goals are, and that you don't just have to line yourself up as much. But I think in games like this, particularly with Kilkenny and Tipperary, we know where they're really close games and you know, they're real battles. I think some of the things like that get evened out a little bit. And I think, you know, these games are normally very, very intense. And you know, I think so, the home advantage in that situation just mightn't mean as much as, you know, in other situations. I do think Tipperary, though, need to make some statements here. They can't keep going to Nolan Park or even into their own park against Kilkenny and keep getting beaten here. And, you know, I think a lot of people thought after 2010 that they had a chance of making a statement against Kilkenny. Bear in mind that was a very experienced Kilkenny team, of making a statement about themselves, where they stood and where they were going to stand for the following 10 years, and they didn't do it. Well, I think this is an even more important game than that time, because this is an emerging Kilkenny team that's coming out. It's not an experienced one who knew where they were. And I think, you know, the going into Nolan Park, beating Kilkenny on their own home ground in a National League final, and, you know, we know how important Brian treats those games, would make a massive statement for Tipperary, and the particular way that they will do it, I think, is going to be very, very important for them.
It's interesting you say that, because Eddie Brennan on the Sunday game, or League Sunday, was saying that Kilkenny were always the hunted, now they're hunting, and I thought that's a complete different mindset to what the Kilkenny we've been used to over the last decade it was in. But now, when it's Tipperary, does that mindset change again? Is it suddenly the Kilkenny just automatically assume this favourites type?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that would pertain in some situations, all right, but not here. I mean, these two teams are going to go at it hammer and tongs. And, you know, I think whether you're hunted or on the other side, it's not going to make much difference. They're going to go at one another here on Sunday. And I think they can do that, because both of them know they've a little bit still left in the tank for the championship, that they're going to, you know, and they have improvements that they can go for, particularly with daylight training coming in and that over the next couple of weeks. So I don't think so, no. I think both teams will just go for it. But you would expect Tipperary, you know, with the experience that they have. And with that, you know, they need to make statements here that they didn't make 7 or 8 or 9 years ago. Maybe that's what we'll see on Sunday.
Yeah, Lee, how important are those statements?
Yeah, I think they're very important for, you know, psychologically. I think for the likes of Tipperary, when they're going up against Kilkenny, that, you know, they're making these kind of statements, I suppose, at this day and age anyhow, because I suppose, like every other team, including Tip, you know, we were under the helm of Kilkenny there for a long time, and you could see there, you know, year on year as well, that Kilkenny had that hold over Tipperary with being in finals and meeting them at various stages and championships, that they just couldn't get over the line with them. And, you know, it's definitely going to be a big statement this weekend to go to Nolan Park. I know I mentioned there might be a bit of an advantage for Kilkenny, but it doesn't mean that, you know, advantages doesn't always mean those teams win the games. But it just, you know, I imagine Kilkenny will be feeling very comfortable and happy that it's in Nolan Park, and to be feeling going into the game that it's an advantage to them because it's at home. And maybe they might feel, you know, that the comfortability and just being used to the surroundings in their own dressing rooms and stuff like that just brings an element of comfort. And, you know, but then again, Tipperary are going to be going in as a team that are just full of confidence at the moment, I think. You know, they probably didn't get off, I think, lost their first game in the National League, but they really picked it up after that. And, you know, the style of hurling that they have at the moment is incredible to watch. You know, in my opinion, they're probably the most complete team in the country. You know, they have it all. They can do it all. They can play it short, play it long. They're ball winners. There's so many lads to come back into the team. And, you know, them lads are going to add so much to it. You know, you name out a couple of them, like Bubble and Norm McGrath, they come back, Seamus Camden, Brendan Marr, Bonnermar. You know, you don't know where these lads are going to actually fit in when they come back either. But, you know, every day Tipperary play against Kilkenny, it's a massive, massive battle. It's a very exciting game. It's the biggest, I suppose, rivalry in the country when the two teams clash. And it's always tight and close and an interesting contest. But it's just, you know, at the weekend, I imagine it's going to be another very, very close game. But, yeah, I just think, you know, Tipperary will have to definitely lay down a marker early on in the game as well.
Is there a worry, or is this just nonsense talk, that they could show their hand too much? You would have heard the fallout from the game that you played on Sunday, that the worry was that Kilkenny showed Wexford too much. Like, you know, you know well what they're going to be like in the championship.
Well, I think we can definitely see at the moment that Kilkenny are trying to moderate their game. And, you know, you don't necessarily work on one game in the National League to then come up with another one for the Championship. You know, you try to have your systems in play during the National League to work on them, to get better at them, get guys used to playing them and become confident within the system to trust it. You know, and I don't think, like, I suppose you don't design one tactic for National League, and some teams might hold one or two things back, but everyone wants to win and everyone will do anything to win. And if you feel doing plan A to win the game is going to win the game, you're going to go with it regardless of what you think you're going to show the opposition. You know, we can all see at the moment Kilkenny's been playing a different style of hurling throughout the National League, that they're working the ball from the back, they're throwing the ball around a lot more, they're doing a lot of things that would have been two or three years ago Cody wouldn't have allowed happen. You know, we highlighted on the Sunday game the other night that the ball was out in the wing back's position, I think, and the work the background to Owen Murphy, which worked it all to the other side of the field. You never would have seen Kilkenny do that before. But again, we just go back to, it goes back to our point that me and Cheddar made earlier, teams retaining possession and working the ball up the field, and you can see Kilkenny are doing an awful lot more of that. So, you know, you see the likes of the changes that they're making within their systems. But I don't think Tip would have showed too much in their hand, or Kilkenny would have showed ourselves or Tipperary too much in their hand over the weekend playing against ourselves. You know, I think they would have just went out to win that game, and that was their game plan, and they went on and done it. And whether they do it in Championship or not, we don't know. But, you know, you can see that that's the kind of game plan that they're going with at the moment, and it's working for them. So why would it change from it? Regardless of anything, that game plan that they actually played, it is hard to stop. You know, it's a game plan that they look at the moment that they're very comfortable within it, and they're confident within it, and they move the ball around very efficiently. And it's, you know, when teams are playing with that element of confidence and trust within their system, it's a very, very hard thing to break down.
Well, talk to me about shape, lads, because obviously that's one way they're playing. But I assume are we going to get an old fashioned 15v15 here? Cheddar, go you first.
I think players will play their position maybe a little bit more, but the mobility of players now, particularly in forwards and all of that, is very, very different. So when you're talking about traditional 15-on-15, where players more or less stood in their position and went for the ball from that position, you're not going to see that. But you will see more. You won't see two-man full forward line with a drifter out the field, or maybe three-man midfield or a sweeper or something like that. At least I haven't seen either team play that much like that so far. But if you look at Kilkenny and look even at their use of Walter Welsh, a number of years ago you'd been putting Walter Welsh at 14, and they rarely play him there anymore. If you look at Tipperary, for a number of years they were playing Bonner at centre forward as a traditional type centre forward. They rarely play him there anymore, you know, they're looking at different ways of playing and that. And I agree with Lee. I think showing her hand is you know, very much overstated now. Look, the opposition managers, if they're worth their salt at all, are going to study you and study your team and study actually where you might be going to go and second guess where you might be going to go and how they're going to counteract it and all of that. So I agree with Lee. You know, you've got to look after your own team. Yes, you've got to have an eye on the opposition. You've got to have your own system. And from game to game, you're trying to refine that and improve it, as I say, with an eye on the opposition. But back to your point, I think it will be 15-on-15, but just not the traditional that we were seeing. I mean, if you were looking at, you know, Jason will probably be starting off full forward, but does he play out and out at the edge of the square? You know, not really. You know, it'll be interesting to see who Tipperary will pick centre forward. You know, there's a lot of permutations here, even on the teams that will go out, and that's not necessarily with an eye on Kilkenny from Tipperary's perspective. They've just been changing their team all the year, and they're trying to arrive, really, I suppose, at the, you know, the right team for the Championship. And you know, some of that's due to injury as well. You know, if Shane McCallum was fit for Sunday, would they play him? If Brendan Maher was fully fit for Sunday, will they start him? And that, you know, so there's lots of things, I suppose, we won't really find out until Sunday. You know, terms of how the team will set out. But I think it will be traditional six backs, six forwards, two midfielders, but there'll be an awful lot more mobility than, you know, we would have seen a number of years ago.
You mentioned Jason Ford there. He's the league's top scorer. He scored 560 in six games. I think he's averaging 12.5 per match. He got 211 in the semi-final against Limerick. Is this going to be his biggest test at the weekend? Probably Paddy Walsh.
No, it will be a test on him. There's no doubt about that. But I think it's interesting just to look back at why Jason Ford has improved so much. I mean, Jason Ford was a fantastic underage player. I actually saw him playing with colleges when he was very young, and he was simply a standout player then. But that was at that time. It was much more to do with his technical skills and that at the time. But I don't know. I know I read somewhere during the week, it might be one of his Tipperary colleagues that mentioned that he put in a savage pre-season this year and got himself trimmed down to be able to play at this level, and I think it's made a huge difference to him. You know, nobody ever doubted his aggressiveness, nobody ever doubted his hunger, nobody ever doubted his hurling and his technical ability and his scoring ability and all of those things, except that when you looked at him previously, you might look at muscle definition and some of those things. You just said, well, look, if he was to get this part of his play right or his body right, what type of hurler could he be? And it looks like that he has sorted that out, that he himself has sorted that out and put himself in a much, much better position to be able to play at the level he's playing at. I think, you know, he's also, bear in mind, done this for UL. He's not just necessarily done it for Tipperary. He's been doing this since very early in the year here. So he's obviously played against some good players prior to this, you know, at Fitzgibbon level and at county level. And, you know, he's produced the goods. And, you know, he is a serious hurler. And I think I spoke to Woolley here the last day. He's a Silver Mines hurler. And anybody remembers the previous representative from Silver Mines was one Jim Kyo, and Jim didn't suffer fools gladly when he was hurling, and I think Jason will be the same. He's a tough, abrasive hurler that has very, very high technical skills, and I think he's the fitness levels now to be able to deliver. He will be tested by Pádraig Wells on Sunday, not necessarily by Pádraig, but by the rest of the Kilkenny defence in that as well. But look, at the end of the day, he can only be as good as the quality and the volume of ball that's coming into him. You know, if the Tipperary half-back line is not on top, and then there's just, you know, sort of poor ball going into him, or not enough ball going into him, he's not going to win them all. But if he's a high volume of ball coming into him at the way he wants it, you know, I think there's going to be times when Jason will be unmarkable.
Agree with that, Lee?
Yeah, I would agree with every bit of it. Jason Ford at the moment is probably the most formed player in the league. You know, every day he's hotting up serious scores, and you know, he's having a great influence on the Tipperary team. He's contributing an awful lot there. But look, I suppose you'd look at Jason Ford at the moment and you'd wonder, Jesus, why is it taking us so long to get to his starting position and start making an impact there. You know, we've seen over the number of years where he's come on game, he had glimpses of brilliance, and this year he's shown a level of consistency, and that's where you get your reputation. And at the moment, Jason Ford is definitely building that for himself. And you know, I've seen it before with guys that I've played with. I've seen it before with guys that I still play with now, even. And then I see guys that don't even play the game anymore, you know, at an underage level, that have an unbelievable technical ability to be able to, that's just a skill level to have as young kids. And sometimes it can get caught in their mind that, you know, that this kind of way of playing is going to get me by throughout the rest of my days. And as they get older into senior setups and stuff, it just doesn't work out like that, because they haven't evolved with maybe trying to work on other parts of their game in terms of that hard graft, that winning that dirty ball and just getting that grip between your teeth. You know, sometimes they can get caught up a little bit with just kind of focusing on, I suppose, the ability they had when they were younger, and that gets them by. And look, I'm not saying this is what Jason Ford's problem was, but you can definitely tell at the moment the different level of fitness that the man has, and you know, the aggression within his tackles, and his work rate is definitely up. And you know, it's sometimes with younger guys, the skill level they have, they kind of tend to maybe neglect that side of the game, and it affects them as they get a bit older, because they mightn't just fit into the team and anymore, and it messes with their head a bit. But you can definitely see Jason Ford as an athlete and as a hurler, he's gone to a different level, I suppose, this year than any other year. And look, he's, in my opinion, he's the foreign player in the National League, and you can tell that by his stats and the scores that he's putting up on the board.
So skill's not enough to make it an inter-county game. You need more than that.
Yeah, 100%. It's, you know, you see a lot of skillful players that will come and go throughout games, but you'll see some of the skillful players that just, you know, some players mightn't have that hard graft or that never die attitude at times. You know, sometimes they can give up on themselves a bit more. Their confidence might be affected by some days where there's a guy that they're marking that's that's a lot more aggressive than he is. And, you know, that would be a tactic of the opposition at times, to put an aggressive guy on a skillful lad that maybe doesn't want to know anything about that side of the game, and it just takes him away from it altogether. And that's where the inconsistency comes in, when you perform one day and you can't perform the next, and you have glimpses of brilliance, but in terms of an overall impact on the game, it just might be that efficient. So it's definitely just having a skill level without having that aggressiveness, that physical presence on the field, and that attitude of not being bullied today. That's definitely something that is massively required within playing at the county.
Were you ever used as the guy to go in and bully one of those skillful players, Lee?
I wouldn't be known as a bully now, you know, but I definitely wouldn't be a lad that would allow myself to be bullied either.
Well, lads, tell me, Cheddar, you tell me, if you were managing Kilkenny now, what would you do about Paddy Maher at the weekend?
I think it's an interesting one, because I was at the game last Saturday night, and I think Kyle Hayes tried to play a little bit out in front of him, not dissimilar to the way Noel McGrath plays for Tipperary, but I think the Limerick half back line didn't find him, and you know, maybe he wasn't showing well enough for it, maybe they hadn't practiced it well enough, but that left Paddy Maher sitting back then in the centre back, or even behind the centre back position, and he mopped up an awful lot of ball, including taking an awful lot of ball off his full back line. And he's a very, very dangerous player when he gets the ball in his hand. Like, his distribution is 80 yards up the field, and it's accurate, and it's at the right height. So I'm going back to the point about Jason. If Paddy Maher is left on his own in behind the half back line, and they're finding him, and he's able to distribute quality ball up the field, well then it's difficult to mark the likes of Jason then at that stage. But I think that's going to be interesting, because the other side of that is, I mean, Lee can correct me here, but I think TJ is playing centre forward for Kilkenny, and at the minute he's the game breaker player for Kilkenny. So is Paddy going to step up on him and try and as the O'Shea's do say, hammer the hammer? Is Paddy going to step up on him, and is that going to go hip to hip with him, or is he going to stay back like he did last Saturday night? So there's a couple of really interesting things that I'm really looking forward to seeing, particularly at the start of the match. How have each management handled the game breaker players in their teams, and that applies. You know, you asked the question, that applies to Paddy as well. Paddy at the minute, even though he's a half back, he's a game breaker player for Tipperary because of the quality of the ball that he puts up the field. So you simply cannot leave him loose around the place, because the other Tipperary backs will find him and then he'll distribute. So, you know, is TJ Reid then going to step in on him and go real physical on him, or is he going to, you know, try and play his own game? I mean, you know, TJ Reid is a slight man, but he's a very competitive and very combative player as well. Air game or ground game makes a difference to him. So if both of them end up on one another, I think he'll be a very, very interesting duel on Sunday.
Could you have a potential of Walter Welsh coming out of Hurling's tallest man against Hurling's strongest man?
Well, ideally what you would like to do is keep, particularly on game breaker players, is keep changing the type of player that's on him, so you keep him guessing. You've got to engage his mind the whole time about his zone, and not let him settle in on his own game. Ideally that's what you would do, just change the type of player that's on him. You know, it doesn't need to happen every couple of minutes, but you could have just a circulation going with two players or maybe three players, that he's ending up playing on a different type of player that he needs to adjust his own game to actually mark. So I think that could be the case. It could be a game plan like Kenny that they would change that, and they could equally put the likes of Keown on him, you know, who will just, you know, wear into him as such and just not allow him hurl. You know, there's different permutation. Kilkenny actually have a number of players at the minute that can play in a different way, so it'll be interesting to see what they do.
Lee, what about Ronan Maher? Like, is there a specific thing that Kilkenny can do to try and halt him? Do you bring Conor Fogarty back into the team?
Well, definitely Conor Fogarty is a talisman for Kilkenny. He's work rate is second to none. He's one of those workhorses within any setup, and any team around the country would love to have. You know, he's a great attitude, he's a great athlete, and we won't forget that he's hurling is excellent as well. You know, and he's really added so much to Kilkenny over the last number of years in terms of being that man for them that breaks down play, and you know his ability as well to get the ball moved forward and take his scores. You know, he's one of the best midfielders around, and the other day I suppose he came on, you know, and he had an impact immediately when he came on, just in terms of his presence being in the field with the Kilkenny lads. You could see that they were feeding off his energy. But you know exactly, yeah, he could slot in there at the weekend, you know. But the thing is about midfielders these days, because the game has gone so much down a tactical route of
positions and you know, retaining possession and, you know, getting the ball from A to B through the hands and stuff. Midfielders are not that inclined to pick up their men anymore. Midfielders usually work on their own game and try to have as much of an impact going forward, because if you're trying to move the ball from the hands going forward, midfielders just tend to, you know, try to stop the opposition coming forward, and while doing that, then the opposition midfielder might peel off and get the ball off the shoulder and move forward with it. So midfielders, in my opinion, these days are not exactly picking up each other. They almost try to have as much of an impact in their own game going forward and attacking, and the defensive side of a midfielder is almost second to them at the moment. Now it's, you know, what can we do going forward? I know, obviously, look, midfielders' mindset is when the ball is turned over, they pick up their man again. But it's just, it's very hard to try and get yourself to get forward if your midfielder's not picking up while you're doing this. And if you get forward, you make it to the 45-yard line or just a little bit inside, the ball is turned over. Immediately, that ball can be transferred straight into your man's hands and he's gone down the field with it. So midfielders these days are starting to accept that kind of thing, but they're just trying to have as much of an impact going forward as possible. You know, Ronan Maher is an example of it. He's a defender by nature, and he'll pick up his man, but when Tipperary turn over the ball, he is going forward. And, you know, but midfielders these days are not, they're talking up, like, you could guess from your both midfielders, some midfielders could have 7-8 points between them, you know, 6 points between them, and that just kind of proves that they're kind of really working on going forward, and they're really working on getting loose for their backs and get the ball to get the ball to themselves, to the midfield, for them to spread it inside or have a shot at the post themselves. So, you know, it's another way of the modern game, the way it's gone, that midfielders don't necessarily just follow each other around the field now and just pick up loose ball whenever they can. They're really having a massive, massive impact on defensively and attacking. And you know, I just see it these days, and even from playing there myself, I feel that as well. You know, when your team gets the ball, you want to go forward and have as much of an impact as possible going forward. Get on the scoreboard, set up a couple of plays. And you know, I know myself, obviously, from playing in the forwards also, that if you're being marked and you're in the forwards, you're being marked, and in midfield, you don't necessarily feel like there's someone marking you the whole way through the game.
Yeah, I'd agree with Lee. I think Lee has explained it very, very well here, I suppose, just the change in role, particularly in midfielders. I think you're really concentrating now on your job to be done as a midfielder rather than you cancelling out your man. And, you know, I think the range of running now for a midfielder is much more than it used to be a number of years ago. If you look at, you know, most teams are supplementing their defenders now by midfielders or wing forwards coming back into the defence to mop up the space and to close out the space, and also to be able to take the ball off of the defenders coming out and create a 2-1 or a 3-1 coming off the half back line. And then when the ball's up in the forwards, they're expected to be that extra man running through the middle just to create the openings for goals and that. So I think they're really the jobs you're looking for. And I think, you know, when you're coaching your teams, you are now asking either your half-back line or your half-forward line to be picking up their midfielders if they're around the place. So you might have a wing forward hedging between his own man and the midfielder that allows your midfielder then to you know, drive into your forwards to create the extra man, maybe on the open side in the field and that. So I think Lee has explained that really, really well, that there's a real significant change now in midfielders. And I suppose in doing that, you're trying to, you know, gain the psychological advantage over your opponent and break him psychologically by getting on the ball and hurting his team more than he's hurting you. And sometimes when you do that, that's just enough. You know, the other player just really accepts defeat and just doesn't fight hard enough for it, or at least some of them anyway. Back to Conor Fogarty, I just think that he is the ideal link man at midfield when you're looking for that type of player that I've just explained. And a lot of this is even down to the detail. Even, for example, on puckouts, or particularly short puckouts, you know, when the ball is in the air, you know, you can make 20 metres easily or 30 metres in a run into the defence. And, you know, Conor Fogarty is a former back, knows what to do back there, knows the areas to be in to be able to take ball off the defence, knows what type of a ball to carry up the field or to drive up the field. So I think he's a real utility man and a very important player for Kilkenny. I think we've sort of forgotten about him over the last couple of weeks there, you know, when you were talking about the likes of Colin Fennelly and some of the other players that have to come back there. I think, you know, in terms of making the team tick, I think he's probably one of the more important players to come back for them.
Lee, we're going to let you go there, but we can't let you go without giving us a prediction. How do you see this one going?
Yeah, I think, you know, at the moment it is going to be a very tight battle, a very interesting one. There's no man or woman or child in the country that doesn't like to watch a game with a Tipperary headline, you know. So at the moment, I just think with the way Tipperary are, and I mentioned it earlier, in my opinion, they're probably the most complete team in the country. You know, just how dynamic their team is, the way they can play, they have it all. They're a full package, really. Kilkenny at the moment are going through a little bit of a transition. A lot of young guys are playing, some of them a little bit inexperienced for a big day that's going to be at the weekend. But all in all, I think it's going to be a very close game. But I do think Tipperary will edge it in the end.
Thank you very much, Lee. After this, we'll look at the rest of the odds and the predictions.
And the game takes on, can very, very often, and take on a life of its own. What's tactics? I mean, you got to make decisions and you got to decide what you're going to do, and at the end of the day, you hand it over to the players and the players play, you know. The game was fast, was furious, it had everything really, you know, and you don't have too much influence on what's happening. What happened last year, it goes out the window, or the year before, or whenever it was. Tipperary, don't go away. The air is the air. And the game takes on, can very, very often, and take on a life of its own.
Jesus, thank Christ for Cheddar Plunkett and Lee Chin. This would have been a disaster otherwise. There's only one of us here now. It's becoming a disaster, Shane. Cheddar, so obviously we're looking at the one game, Kilkenny, Tipperary. We've got the league final. Lee's back in Tipperary. You look at some of the stats. Tipperary haven't won the league since 2008. Kilkenny haven't won since 2014. Considering the two names, it's mad that they haven't won that much. If you go back from the last six games that they played each other, Kilkenny have won 3, Tipperary have won 2, drawn 1, so it's very tight. How do you see this one going?
Look, the statistics would say it is going to be very, very tight. So you know, obviously, I don't think it's going to be any different than that. I think there is some interesting, I suppose, context to the game on Sunday. You know, it's probably alluded to it earlier on. You know, when Kilkenny beat Tip previously, you know, you would have probably said that, you know, Tip had the experienced team, and you know, when you rattle off some of the names that they had in their team and some of the young players coming into their team, that Kilkenny team, you know, was really at the height of their power. This is an emerging team, and look, I know it's in Nolan Park, and it's a National League final, and you know, Kilkenny will definitely be up for this, and there will be nothing in it. But I think Tipperary really need to look at themselves now. They had an opportunity a number of years ago, as I said earlier on, to you know, bully Kilkenny, I suppose, and just keep them down for a while. And it didn't happen for them. I don't know whether they tried or they didn't try, but it didn't happen anyway. So I think there's an opportunity for them Sunday. There's a couple of other aspects to that as well, but I'll just deal with this one first. I can certainly well remember back to the 60s Tip team and going into the 70s, and you know, they were a very severe team that, you know, took on all comers and put them to the sword, you know, pretty aggressively. And I think Tip, you know, that won't win matches in the present day, you know, intelligent hurling and you know, good use of the ball and good tactics and good players obviously win matches. But I think Tip need to really bully Kilkenny on Sunday and make a serious statement here that for the next 4 or 5 years, when it comes to matches between the two of us, you know, we're going to be king of our patch here. And obviously they need to win the match as well, because at the minute to have much more senior players and, you know, much more experienced players, and particularly in key positions than maybe Kilkenny do. Now I'm assuming that Colin and Paul Murphy and those won't be back on Sunday. So I think Tip have got to do that. But there's some other issues even that are important to Tipperary. I think the Tipperary Championship, you know, as I said, you know, it's a very, there's a lot of senior teams in Tipperary starting off next weekend. I think there's a game the following weekend, and then it's back into the divisional championships in Tip. And you know, it's coming around out to the delight and your chance to train and be able to make things happen. But prior to the game against Limerick, they may not have many chances to do that. and they're hurling for four Sundays in a row after that. So, you know, I think it's really important to them that they would win on Sunday and, you know, use that confidence and self-belief going into the championship. But equally, as I say, for, you know, for the next couple of years, you know, Kilkenny are always going to be there. It, you know, I don't know where people were making assumptions that Kilkenny were, had slipped away and were going to slip away in my lifetime. They've never been. So it's unlikely that they were going to do this over the next couple of years either. So Tip, I think, need to have that, you know, take that psychological advantage over Kilkenny, and no better place to do it than in Nolan Park on their own home ground. So, you know, based on a couple of things like that, and equally that they have, you know, they definitely have scoring forwards. I'd have a little bit concerned, I spoke earlier on the week about my concern about their defence, and particularly their full back line. And particularly, you know, in terms of the way teams play and open things up in that. And I think also they need to get more return from their puck outs. I think their puck outs against Limerick, particularly in the first half, that, you know, I didn't count them, but I just know they lost a lot of primary possession on their own puck outs. So I think they need to start out a couple of things there. But I just think that the hunger and the desire and the wishes to really, really make a statement, not necessarily for this year, but for the next couple of years, are really important traits that are going to bring into Nolan Park on Sunday. And you know, I expect them to use that hunger to, you know, to really drive at this game and really go for it. And I think the match back in February, I think they played back in February, it was only a point in. It was a very, very high scoring game, 222 to 221. But I think on both teams there's only maybe 7 or 8 players that were playing that will be playing on Sunday, so it may not have a huge amount of bearing on it. But I think Kilkenny had to get a couple of goals early in the second half to sort of bring them back into that game, and Tip sort of left them back into it. And it's been a little bit of a history of Tip over the last couple of years that they'd have teams put away but just leave them hanging there long enough not to really bury them. And I think the whole psychology is all in that space for Tipperary on Sunday. You know, it's pure single-mindedness about obviously winning the game, but obviously making a serious statement for you in your own position, but equally for Tipperary hurling for the next 4 or 5 years. And I think all the comments I've seen from Tipperary players this week was very much about the fight for the jersey within the panel, and that sounded very, very genuine. And I just know myself that when you have that sort of honesty in a dressing room and that real genuine competition for jerseys in a dressing room, it's a great place to be. And, you know, players will just not give up their county jersey that very, very easily. And, of course, the best way or the easiest way you can give it up is performing poorly against Kilkenny on Sunday. And I just think there'll be a little bit of vim and fight in every Tipperary player to really bring the fight to Kilkenny on Sunday and then, you know, outscore them. But I don't think there'll be much in it.
So you're going Tipperary. Lee Chin's going Tipperary. I suppose I'll go Tipperary too because I've been told so. That's everything. We'll be back on Monday for a review show of obviously the league final.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. Let it go.